I'm Sam, an alcoholic.
Hi, Sam.
Member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dope fiend. And world's oldest living lowrider. A lot of other things. I drank a lot. I don't know how you people drank, but I did a lot of it. I'm not one of these two beer, oh dear, drinkers. I'm the type that the bartender asked to leave because I was causing trouble. I drank as much as I possibly could for as long as I possibly could, and then a couple of years longer. I took a lot of drugs. Anything I could get my hands on there. I don't identify with people who specialized in certain things. I took it all. Identifying with the man over here tonight said he was chemically dependent. I used to say that I was of an addictive nature. Clean it up. My sponsor explained it to me. He says, I'm going to tell you what, Jar, you're a pig. I smoked a lot of non-habit-forming marijuana that I was addicted to and kept on going as long as I could and ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I sobered up. I'm a late starter. I didn't want to drink because I didn't want to be like my family. Most of the members of my family drink. Those that don't should. When I was a rotten, obnoxious kid, I got into a lot of trouble when I was very young, and my mother sentenced me to 8 years in a Catholic school, where I majored in guilt. Their big thing. Mama laid the cure on me because I was always in some kind of trouble. By the time I was 5 years old, I was smoking big black cigars, chewing tobacco. My Aunt Bessie would give me a quarter if I would say fuck in the grocery store and embarrass my mother. I got a dollar if I said it at church. So Mama decided to send me away for the cure, so I went to this Catholic school. I taught the nuns new words right away, but they also taught me new words, and they taught me about staying every night after school. That's the first thing I learned. But my Aunt Bessie told me, if you don't want to do something that those nuns tell you to do, just tell them to shove it. And I did. And they showed me, too. I spent 2.5 years fighting that every night after school. 2.5 years. Finally, I gave up. I became what they wanted to get them off my back. Became an altar boy. I sang in the choir. And I got straight A's. And then I was held up as an example to those poor other little guilty urchins in there. I did my time and got out of there, and I went straight to a reform school. I've been stealing all the time. My Aunt Bessie taught me the facts of life when I was very young. So I went through puberty in 20 minutes. Got out and got to sinning early on. When I was 16 years old, I was married. I was a father when I was 16. And I was no more of an adult. I'm not very adult today, but I certainly wasn't then. I was a downer type person. I was a suicidal. My Aunt Bessie was my hero. She taught me everything. She was always kind to me. She was the only member of my family. The rest of them, pal, that's it. That was their only thing. But my Aunt Bessie gave me presents, and she loved me. But she was always crying. She was always carried 3 suicide notes and a razor blade for emergencies. The world is such a shitty place to live in, and she was ready to get out at any time, and she was always drunk. Carried a bottle in her purse, and she drank around the clock. And she gathered my sisters and me together one evening when I was about 8 years old, and she told me the secret of life. She said, it's this. You fall out of the womb, and you crawl across hostile territory towards a grave, and that's it. If I'd had any sense, I'd started drinking then. I believed her. I looked around at the world, I looked at the way that I lived, and it was rotten. And I didn't like it, and I didn't know how to change it. And I'm 16, 17 years old, and I have responsibilities, and I could care less about it. When I was 18 years old, I was arrested for 9 felonies, and I was guilty of every one. And my Aunt Bessie always told me, no matter what happens, deny it. Even if they have pictures, deny it. So, naturally, I said no to everything, but they had pictures, fingerprints, and witnesses, and I was in trouble. And they threw me in the jail, Two-Bit County Jail in Southern Indiana, where I was raised. And my Uncle Bill was already in there doing 90 days for drunken disorderly. My Aunt Gussie was next door in the women's jail doing 90 days for drunken disorderly, trying to knife my Uncle Louis. No big deal. My father came to see us on the first visiting day, and he was drunk, so they arrested him in the visiting room. So there we were, all together again. It was that way every time I went to jail. Now, I got a 1 to 10 year sentence out of that, and I did my time. I was a model prisoner. I had 2 uncles in that penitentiary, and they showed me how to do easy time. I knew what one day at a time was long before I got to AA. Anybody's been in the joint knows that. I did my time and got out, and I was almost 21 years old. I had been divorced. She found a nice guy and married him and moved to Pittsburgh. Got rid of me. I started to drink. And I loved it. From the very beginning, I loved what that bottle did. It made me into a lot of things that I had always secretly wanted to be and that I dreamed about. Or I thought it did in my mind. Because I know how to live in my mind, in fantasies. I did that as a child. It was the only way I survived. It's all I had. Was books, movies. I couldn't stand my family. I couldn't stand the reality of other people that were close to them. I hated it. But booze took them all away. Made everything nice. In the first year of my drinking, I found the wonderful world of amphetamines. I loved amphetamines. Speed. I bullshitted myself that those amphetamines enhanced my intelligence. What they did was speed up my mouth. So I had a combination of an amphetamine mouth and a Demerol brain. And I got into a lot of trouble. I became a big shit magnet for the cops. I couldn't get from one bar to the other without getting rousted. And I didn't know what to do about it. I was still on parole. I couldn't make a living. I couldn't do anything. I had to get that money, get the bottle every day, and I did, whatever it took. I didn't care that I was on parole. I ran into a bookkeeper who was a mathematical genius. He worked in a factory in this small town where I lived, and he figured out how to fill out income tax forms and get money back, and I did not work in this factory. But I signed the piece of paper, and here comes a nice check. We cashed it, split the money. We did that for 3 years. Third check arrived, and 2 weeks later, the police arrived. I had used my father's name, so they arrested my father. But that was no big deal, because my father was drunk all the time. He thought he'd done it. So he went into court and pled guilty, and they put him away. While he was in the federal penitentiary, he discovered Alcoholics Anonymous, and the old bastard sobered up, and he never took another drink the rest of his life. So I guess he was ready for it, but he never knew that I 12 stepped him. (Laughter) I held off making that amend as long as I could. And I was a couple of years sober, and it was the last amend that I had to make, and I thought I better go do it. So I went to see the old bastard, and he was still as mean as ever. But here we were, father and son, both sober members of AA, and we're going to a meeting. And as we're going out the door, he picks up a pistol off the table and sticks it down his belt. And I said, "What the hell kind of meeting are we going to? Are you afraid somebody's going to steal your big book?" He punched me right in the mouth and knocked me on my ass, and he says to me, "That's the way I release, you son of a bitch." And I thought of that amend I had to make. In a lot of trouble just saying what I'd already said. And then I realized that the step says, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I am others. So I held off making that amend as long as I could, and fortunately a few years ago he died. So I got out of that. We never got along, drunk or sober. He's the worst man I've ever met in my life. But he was the one that showed me the way to AA, because he stayed sober. I tried to catch him drunk. I could not, because he wasn't drinking. He got off parole, and he's still going to those meetings. Then I figured out he's the treasury, stealing the money. That's the only reason he's still gone to those guys. I didn't know that AA was broke. I got off parole, and I had a chance to move to a town where the police were paid off. You could buy drugs in the liquor stores there. And I had found it, what I was always looking for. No hassles, and get all the drugs you want. So I would go in the liquor store and get what I had to have, and I was able to steal and make a bunch of money there, and I survived. However, in this type of an environment, there's a lot of knives and guns, and I was a witness to a killing. And I knew how to be an alive witness. Cut out. I had a 500-mile long umbilical cord, so I went home to Mama. Mama had been to Al-Anon. She had those little beady eyes and that smile they get when I got there. She got me up against the wall and released me. She was as tough as the old man. She told me that I could stay there for 10 days or a week, then I had to get my ass out of there. She said, "You're loaded, you're going to stay loaded, and I know it, and you can get your goddamn ass out of here. I don't want to see you kill yourself." And while I was there, my youngest brother came running from the police and others. And one morning, he and I were puking together. He said to me, "If our luck holds out, we'll be dead by noon." And that's how bad it was, and I had two more years to go. I moved to Venice, California, and I lived there. I moved into an apartment building that was full of other lower companions like myself. And I lived next door to a girl who was a suicidal that I immediately was attracted to. And she would come home every night from work, brush her teeth, turn on the gas, and go to bed. That's my kind of people. She would drink anything, take any kind of pill. She weighed 95 pounds. And we had a quack doctor up the street. We would take her to and use her to get pills. We'd carry her in there, and this doctor would give her this phony thing, and he'd say, "Oh, my dear, you're dying. You'll have to have some of these pills." And he would lay them on us, and we'd go back to the very next Saturday and do the same thing over again. And I drank from the liquor store across the street, and I would go in there, and after a while he knew what I wanted, whatever was the cheapest. I couldn't even ask anymore. I pointed. I was getting kicked out of a lot of bars. But I still had the old brain going with those damned amphetamines. I had a vicious mouth. Somebody would say to me, "You ought to quit drinking." I'd say, "You mind your own goddamn business. I'm an alcoholic, and I can't help this. I have to." But I couldn't let it go at that. I would go on to say, "I am just like my Uncle Louis. He drank a pint of whiskey every day of his life. He lived to be 93 years old, and after he'd been dead for 3 days, he looked better than you do right now." Nobody was going to tell me I couldn't drink. I lived there for 2 years, and I called my father at Christmas time, which was the only time he would accept a collect call from me, and he suggested that I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for some reason or other, I paid attention to him, and I quit taking all his pills, I quit drinking, and I went to AA. It took me 2 days to quit. And I finally got into a meeting. I started out 10 o'clock in the morning, and it took me till almost 10 o'clock that night to get into a meeting. I was dingier than hell. I walked in just before the end of the meeting. There were people sharing there. And the first person I heard was a lady that said that she had wet her pants twice and she came to AA. And I thought, "God damn, wait till they find out what I've done." I went to a meeting the next night, and there was a man sharing that his mother had given him a horse for Christmas, and he kept getting drunk and falling off the horse. So he came to AA. And I really didn't hear much that was close to where I came from. They didn't talk about pills, and they did not talk about marijuana, and so I did not talk about it. By this time, I'm passing as a human being there, and I would say to them, "I have a slight problem with the bottle." That's all I would admit to. At the end of 10 days, since they hadn't mentioned marijuana, I smoked some weed. Why not? Nobody said anything about it. I got tired of them goddamn dull, dead meetings. And they were. Don't let anybody shit you when they say, "Oh, I've never been to a bad meeting." Screw you. Come on with me. After smoking that weed, I got thirsty, so I drank. And then I got drowsy, so I took some pills. And that lasted a week. Now, I didn't have to take the 20 questions. I kind of look like them. Somebody read them at one of the meetings, or read some of them, and it said in there something about lower companions. And I thought, well, hell, there must be lower companions in AA someplace. And while I was loaded, I thought about that. And I decided to try it one more time. So I quit again, and I went back to A&A, and I walked into a club where I'd gone to a couple of meetings, and I said to a man, "Where the hell's a lower companion group?" And he said, "Come on, I have just the group for you." And he took me over to the corner of Pico and Alvarado, where there was a group called the End of the Line. That was their name. That's the way they were listed in the directory. And at that first meeting, the leader pounded the gavel down to start the meeting, and he looks around. He says, "Well, there ain't no traditions here. It's every man for himself." They read about two paragraphs out of chapter 5, and he said, "That's enough of that shit." He asked for announcements, and there were several announcements about a dance up the street and some other things going on. And one guy got up and said, his announcement was, he was sinking into a depression. He said, "I'm going to kill myself this week, and I won't be at the meeting next week. I want to say goodbye to all my friends." God damn, my kind of people. He's leaving. The leader says to him, "Go ahead and do it, you son of a bitch. Nobody likes you anyway." Ha 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 I was at a meeting last Thursday night over in the Wilshire district, and the guy that was leading that meeting that first night that I was there, and the one that stood up and said he was going to kill himself, were both in that meeting last Thursday night. They're both still sober. And last January the 11th, that was 28 years. That's a long time in the life of a human being, but in an alcoholic or a dope fiend's life, that's a goddamned eternity. Now, these two still hate each other. They were sitting on opposite sides of the room. I like the continuity of that. To be able to see those people. They're still around. They're both still clean and sober. That first meeting I went to, about 10 minutes into that meeting, through the side door came three dykes. Two sober and one drunk. As they came through the door, the drunker one dropped her purse and out fell a gun, a bottle, and a dildo. The two sober ones got to fighting over the contents of the purse. The leader made him take the fight outside, and they left the drinking one there, and she sobered up, and she is still a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she was up front from the very beginning about things, which she might as well have been. She's 6'3", flat top haircut. They'd arrived on motorcycles. And she says, "Hi, I'm Aggie the Dyke." We certainly knew that. Aggie and I are still friends today. She's one of the kindest human beings I've ever met in my life. She says very loudly that she was made welcome at that group, and that's why she is still sober today. Those people put their actions where their mouth was, and I firmly believe that that should say it for Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you meet any prejudice any place, and you're liable to meet that sort of thing about anything, there's bigotry in Alcoholics Anonymous, the same as there is any place else. But all I hope for groups like that that are that prejudicial is the goddamn We Care sign falls on their fucking head. Hope that's plain enough. Periodically, when I hear about one of those groups or go there and feel that sort of thing, I call up Aggie and I say, "Come on, let's go stir some shit." So one night, Aggie and I rounded up a bunch of people and we went to the Brentwood meeting. We walked in and sat down, and Aggie got up to go get some coffee for herself and me. The guy sitting next to me says, "Good God, who is that?" I said, "That's my friend Aggie." He says, "God damn, I'll bet she could kickstart a 747. Now, she probably could. She is a very kind, wonderful human being. And I value that friendship. The friendship and love that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous and never found anyplace else. I still ain't got it in my family. I made the mistake of going to my family reunion about 3 or 4 years ago. Here comes my Uncle Frank and he says, "When did you get out of the Army?" "I've never been in the Army." "I got drafted. I was in the penitentiary. Hell, they were going to take me out." "I've got another uncle that says to me, 'When did you start wearing glasses?' "I've had glasses since I was 9 years old." I don't want to live like that. I'd rather be around Aggie and people that are aware of things. So I don't hang around my family. I don't hate them, but let them live their own lives, do what they want to do. I found more love and care and concern in Alcoholics Anonymous than any place else I've ever been. And I am one nosy son of a bitch. I have been a lot of places. I've been involved with a lot of churches, and therapy, and psychiatrists, psychologists, group therapy, nude therapy, up yours therapy. Primal screams, anal screams. Anything but work the steps. And that's what it boiled down to. Oh, how long am I supposed to talk?
No. How about another...
Are we supposed to have questions and answers? Or not? That's what we'll did last time.
Yeah. We'll have time after you finish. Which is, another 10, 15 minutes. Whatever suits your fancy.
Okay. Well, how long does it take to say, don't drink and don't use drugs and go to lots of meetings and work those goddamn steps? And that's the message. Most of it anyway. The basic thing. That's the bottom line to me. Have some fun here. I firmly believe in that. Some places you go and it's serious, somber, and deadly. They should have a sign up at their goddamn meetings. Heavy does it. I've been to some of those groups and the average age is deceased. Suckers are dead. They ain't buried yet. I thought when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that was it. It's all over. No more fun. And I'm not even sure what fun was before. Most of it was fantasies, of course. I was a world traveler on my living room floor. I never went anywhere. Laid around loaded and listened to a lot of fine jazz records by singers that leave you with no hope. And complained about the state of the world. I discovered after I sobered up that I played a lot of those records on the wrong speed. I wasn't really listening. I thought Billie Holiday was a man. Total unawareness. I didn't know what was going on. I see that sometimes today, and it's in AA. It's certainly in our society. Take a look at it if you're brave enough. I'm not. I don't watch the evening news. I don't want to get depressed. Much of a downer type thing. Jesus. I've been to some AA meetings where I came out of there, I felt like I'd been listening to Black Sabbath records for 3 days. Try that. Do you in? Live, experience, feel, do things. It's very important here. There's a place in another book that we have, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book. And in the 12 Steps, the opening line says, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 Steps. By God, that's what I want. Not that I don't have rough times. I'm still a human being. I have let myself be trapped by my own ego. I've been sober a few years now, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had some success financially. Have to have something to flaunt to the newcomers, right? I walked into Beverly Hills Cadillac Agency. I bought myself a Cadillac convertible. I drove that to the Venice meeting, as a member, and I parked that in front of the door where you had to go over it, under it, or through it to get into the meeting. I walked into the meeting, and there is a newcomer, and I had bragged about, I'm going to get a car, that sort of shit. There's a newcomer talking to my sponsor, and he says to my sponsor, what kind of a car did Sam get? My sponsor says, he got a green one. I said, it's a Cadillac convertible, you old fool. He said, come here, punk. He said, there's two kinds of cars. Those that run and those that don't run. You got that? Yes, sir. I knew better than to mess with him. Because you see, he was not my first sponsor. The first lower companion meeting I went to, I found the guy that I used to drink with, and he disappeared, and there he was in A&A. So I asked George to be my sponsor. Now, George had a rather liberal program. I was a few days sober, and George and I are going to a meeting. We stopped to get something to eat. George ordered a ham sandwich and a bottle of beer. I said, George, I think that's a no-no. George says to me, beer, it did not have that. I had what he termed frantic sobriety. And he had bullshit filters in his ears. So he could translate my bullshit. The first time I met him, I was about a month and a half sober. And I heard him say at a meeting, he said, I'm sober today and I'm not unhappy about it. And that was my problem, because I was screaming mad about everything. I was depressed all the time. I ran out of a meeting in Venice yelling at them, you son of a bitches will never pressure me into happiness.
That's where you got your name.
You got that? Yes, that's where I got the nickname. I was at that same meeting in that same area, and I didn't like the serenity prayer, so I just took it right off the wall and ripped it up. I stomped on it. I said, this goddamn thing doesn't work. And I went out the door, and as I went out the door, there's a little woman sitting there, and she said, why, there goes Serenity Sam. Stuck with that goddamn nickname. But the sponsor with the bullshit filters in his ears is the one that saved my life, because he translated for me. After I'd been sober for a little while, my phony intellectualism returned. I explained to him all the books I'd read. He said, you're nothing but a well-read idiot. I was beginning to tear the program apart by that time. I said, those stupid cliches, they don't mean shit to me. I said, what the hell does live and let live mean? He said, it means mind your own goddamn business. Something I could understand. I said, what about think, think, think? He said, in your case, it's with what. So I didn't trust anybody, so at those early meetings I went to, they'd given me a meeting directory, and in the back of it there's blank pages, so some of them would put their name in there and their phone number. They said, you call me before you take that drink. I don't care if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, but you call me before you take the drink. So I thought, I wonder if they mean that. So I set my alarm and got up. I called them to see if they meant it. Some of them did and some didn't. Now, I've had some downer and depressed times in my sobriety, and I didn't give a shit what the hell happened. Up yours and everybody else's. Because I allowed myself to get... I painted myself into the corner. That's what happened. A lot of people around me were dying. My sponsors had died. Both of them died sober. Or the next two I got after that first one. And I didn't have anything to depend on. I was spiritually bankrupt. I was into material possessions, collecting things. Standing around near the coffee pot with a big book under my arm, with a lot of expensive clothes on, flaunting the money. I beg your pardon? Does nothing impress you, Dexter? I'm showing off my awareness. Look, this is living here. It is, damn it. Be yourself, or if you're schizophrenic, be yourself. I explained to my sponsor how I was so many people at different times. I had such a wonderful brain. He said, well, perhaps you should get group insurance for yourself. said, if you're going to remain that way, schizophrenic, he said, you have to work the 12 steps, one for each one. You know. I said, bullshit, I'm getting integrated. Work those damn suckers once, it's enough. Well, I've had to continue to work those. 2 years ago, I was in such a depression that I had it with A&A and with this wonderful society we live in, and screw everything, and I left a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one evening, and I started to cry. I fell apart on the way home. I was determined to kill myself. I pulled into the garage. I left the car running. I went in the house and did the dishes. Wrote a suicide note that said, "Dear God, you son of a bitch, see you in a few minutes." Thank you. Here, if you're going to get coffee, Dexter, earn it. I went back out and laid down in the back seat of the car and discovered I had to go to Japan. I'm not going to be found with wet pants. I got up and went back in the house. While I'm in there, the phone rang. I am nosy. I answer the phone on my deathbed. And it was a newcomer in a depression. He is interrupting my suicide attempt with his sniveling. Being sober for a long time, I had to tell him how wonderful I felt. We gurus don't have bad days. I had to interrupt the conversation and say, just a moment, I have to go out and turn off the motor on the car. But I had to get over that dishonesty and that lying. I had talked to a few people about my depression, and I'd gotten a bunch of shit. One of them says to me, "Oh, Sam, you're sober too long for that." And I'm standing there ready to kill myself. This creep comes on with that. Another one said, "Well, why don't you work one of the steps? And why don't you go see so-and-so? He's a spiritual giant." Thank you, Dan. No, I don't want those things. That's for alcoholics. Real alcoholic. Drink a bottle. I found myself in a phone booth one evening, too, and I was crying, and I couldn't get out of the goddamn thing. And I called a guy that I've known a lot of years. He said, "Oh, Sam, don't bother me with that shit. You're always depressed lately. I don't want to hear it." And he hung up. I called a man that I had met that evening. He had 80-some days. And he said, "I understand." He said, "Where are you at?" And I told him. He said, "You stay right there. I'll be there in 10 minutes. And he was. And that's when I learned to listen and to communicate with new people. And I have learned not to hide what is bothering me. So when I see some of these goddamn tired-ass old fools with dust on their big books sitting in meetings, I've been sober for 100 years. They got an autographed picture of Bill Wilson. Well, I saw one of these old assholes not too long ago. Right up the street here in Hermosa Beach. A bunch of newcomers there, and the one guy was, he was doing this, he was still shaking. And this creep gets on the podium and says, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here. You saved my life by just letting me see you tonight." He came on, and he got so spiritual, and he got tears in his eyes. And that meeting was over about 10 minutes later, and that old son of a bitch went right past that newcomer. All right, I have to put my actions where my mouth is. And I don't mouth it off too damn much. I can say I'm grateful. That don't mean shit unless I feel it. And I have to hold out my hand to that newcomer. And I think about some of the newcomers that are in my life today, and I think what would have happened if I had stayed home the night that I met them. I would have missed out on that. And I need them. It is a mutual thing. I had forgotten what my sponsor said to me. He said, "Sponsorship is the friendship of two people for the benefit of both of us." And I can stay home and watch Slip of Vision. I get hung up on anything. I let Cal Worthington become my higher power. I do not stay sober on what I did a lot of years ago. I stay sober on what I do today. I still work those damn steps. I still answer the phones at a central office very anonymously. That keeps the goddamn personalities out of it, or out of my life. At least the people that I work with, I have one rule with them. Never mention my name under any circumstances in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That keeps the personalities out of it, because I became a guru. I stood there. I went to a lot of Gucci Starfucker meetings. I went there and bumped my facade into other facades, and I posed as a human being. I was a closet human being hiding behind that facade. Well, I'm dressed up tonight. This is it, gang. Yeah. To impress anybody, certainly not myself anymore. I'd rather be a human being who is living, experiencing, feeling, doing things. I believe that God's will for me is trial and error. I don't have any direct pipeline to this power. I don't want it. I see people that claim to have it. They're no earthly good. They're so spiritual they can't get above their dead ass. Just sit around and ooze willingness. I know how to do that. I could spend a whole day turning sloth into meditation. I spent a whole day last week coveting my neighbor's wife. Praying for them to move. There was a period in my life I wouldn't have admitted those things to anybody. I'm not so sure I want to admit them now. I think I've said things here tonight I didn't intend to say. I don't put any governing, ruling thing up here. I hear people say, oh, it's the committee up here that's doing this. It's not a committee, that's me. Not somebody else. I hear all these excuses, rationalizations. Oh, I couldn't help it. It got hard, and I followed it. I take the responsibility for my own actions. Blame anything on anybody else. I don't care if it is their fault. I'm the one that's stuck with whatever happens a lot of times. I don't blame my parents. I don't care if I wake up on Judgment Day and find out that my parents, society, that church that I went to, they're 95% of the blame. What the hell's the difference? I'm stuck with me. What am I going to do? If my father's dead, go out and piss on his grave? Oh, I've got that son of a bitch. I am stuck with me. I am the problem, but I'm the solution. If I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about these things that are bothering me, I have very simple beliefs today. I live but only because I'm a member of AA. If I sound like an AA fanatic, that's it. I'll have to sound like an AA fanatic. I don't know of any place else to go. It's worth a damn. And I have had some comfortable, wonderful years in the last few years since I surrendered again to this power, whatever the hell it is. And I'm not a fanatic about that. I don't have a direct pipeline. It doesn't tell me what to do. I got to go out and find. I make mistakes, a lot of them. I want you to see it. I don't want to hide anything. I have no secrets. You want to ask me a question, I got a direct answer. You want to see me? Knock on my door. I've lived in the same place 9 years. I didn't used to do that. I'm the type that moves in the middle of the night with 2 brown paper bags. That's everything. I stand up for what I do. I stand up and I'm counted. I'm not all that popular in some places around here. You might as well know that. I'm not universally loved. I got a letter not too long ago asking me to cease and desist with my dirty mouth about it. A club up the street here in Hermosa Beach. I'll break their anonymity. I don't give a damn about it. Because I called their coffee bar the Herpes Room. I No sense of humor there. I said, that whole club, it's a black hole of AA. People go in there and never seen again. Stand up and be counted. You have as much right to say anything you want to in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or any place else. Say it. I don't lean on my ears. I lean on my experience. I want to learn from it. I don't want to repeat a lot of that shit. I want to do it right so I don't have to come back here. I don't know about reincarnation or some of that shit, but I don't want to come back and have to do all this over again. It is. I don't care if I wake up on Judgment Day and find out I'm an Al-Anon. That's pretty drastic, but... I'd rather be in AA by mistake than out there by mistake on the streets. I get along with Al-Anons most of the time. Oh. One of them punched me. She did. It was a woman. She punched me and tried to hit me. I jumped back, but she hit me anyway. Because during the meeting, I said, well, you know what? Al-Anons have sex with their eyes closed because they can't stand to see an alcoholic having a good time. I've been accused of not taking the program serious, but I do. I take it serious, but not somber or deadly. Life to me is my sobriety, and they're like this. They are way too important to be taken all that serious. What if we wake up on Judgment Day and find out this whole thing is a cosmic joke? I'm doing easy time on this planet while I'm here. I don't know what my length of time is here. I don't think anybody does. I know some that claim to. But I want to do easy time while I'm here. I want to contribute something to the human race instead of take all the time. I'm a great one to take. I have to contribute today and I do it a lot of times because I want to and because that book tells me to. I've learned not to argue too much with that book. So as you can see, I have a pretty good time. Wow. I've spent a lot of years with all those suicide notes and it's a downer world and screw you. And not that way anymore. I'm very lucky. I'm a very lucky human being. And anybody with even a little bit of sobriety is lucky. Push that luck, maintain it, and use it. And so, yeah, I talked a little past my time there. What time is this thing end, Jen?
9:15.
Oh, well, do we have questions and answers now? Or what do we do now?
We have either questions or participation.
Oh, participation. I can participate, but if you got questions, ask me questions. I got nothing to hide. So there, too. That's it. Over and out. I'm through.